VNM Management Incorporated, case number 9610123. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Attorney Les Reardon for Alphonse Mirage.
Attorney General Jennifer Hertz on behalf of Stephen Gray, the creditor's trustee.
Well, we have several matters on today. Why don't we start, Mr. Reardon, with your desire to withdraw?
Your Honor, that's fine. I would say, though, that I'm willing to argue the other motions for Mr. Murad, so if you wanted to defer.
Well, I'm just going to hear all the arguments, and I'll give you my decisions. If any of them come from the bench, I'll give them at the end of the hearing, so
sure.
It doesn't really matter that much. Go ahead. Tell me why you want to.
Well, Your Honor, I was discharged. I indicate as relating to attorney-client discussions, which I think if I should reveal them, I'd like to do that in camera.
No, I'm not asking you for any privilege.
I understand, but I'm willing to do that in camera. Mr. Murad has indicated, in my view, in conversations with some of his past counsel, that he didn't agree with my approach to the case, particularly relative to your views on discovery, and that he told me I was off the case. But there are other reasons as well. I don't think, despite my understanding for the court's desire to move this on, that I'm capable of getting up to speed in the time that the court wants. The court has indicated that Mr. Murad understands the rules and has filed motions and is aware of the process. And in light of the conflict, his lack of resources, his inability to meet his obligations regarding those, even if I was willing to sacrifice a lot of my time without by providing those resources myself, I think it's just unmanageable. I'm willing to help Mr. Murad, but I think the environment, the time needed to get up here, and his desire that I not proceed under the strategy that I want to creates a conflict.
Mr. Murad, you do understand, Mr. Murad?
Yes.
Please rise, please. You do understand, sir, that this matter is going to move forward promptly. Are you prepared to proceed pro se,
yes,
as you have in the past?
Yes.
All right. I will, at the conclusion of this hearing, enter an order permitting you to withdraw. But if you, Mr. Murad wants you to and you're prepared to, I will permit you to argue today.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, let's take the motion for change of venue.
Your Honor, for clarification, I noticed on the order, you're speaking about my motion. This isn't a rehearing on Mr. Murad's motion. It was change of venue to Boston as opposed to the out-of-state, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Motion for a change. Motion 2 for a change of venue to Eastern District of Massachusetts.
Great.
Filed on June 15th, docket number 1015.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, our position, and I should stress this, this is not in reference to the court itself, but the location of the proceedings. Mr. Murad, and I think this court is aware, certainly Judge Kenner was aware, has certain issues relating to both his resources and his personal health. It seems to me, at least relative to trial, that should be conducted in Boston. We're not expressing any reservations about the sitting judge or this court. But for Mr. Murad to be transferred to the Western District, simply because he filed a motion for change of venue to out of state, I think is incorrect. The parties are all in Boston. The bankruptcy rules themselves seem to suggest that the matter should be heard in Boston, and we request your indulgence on that.
Well, I'm a little confused. At various points in this case, and fairly recently, Mr. Murad had asked that this case go to Connecticut, Rhode Island, or I think it was New Hampshire.
And there's New York.
All of which are substantially further away from Boston than Worcester.
I agree.
And those were denied. The case was transferred here. It had nothing to do, of course, with his motion. it basically had to do with Judge Kenna's impending retirement. And now, Worcester's inconvenient, but Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and wherever, we're convenient. Seems a little incongruous. Can you elaborate on that?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. And I think they're different.
Why were those places more convenient?
I don't know if they were that more convenient, but I think Your Honor knows, whether proper or not, that Mr. Murat and Judge Kenner had issues. Mr. Murat filed some recusal motions. Mr. Murat was barred from the court. I don't know why Mr. Murat filed the change of venue to out of state, other than the belief that the court itself in Massachusetts was not partial enough to hear the matter. I don't think it was based on location. I think it was based upon impartiality. What I'm asking for is Your Honor's indulgence when there will probably be very little in terms of actual court time outside of the actual trial to allow Mr. Murat to conduct that trial in a courtroom in Boston.
Where does Mr. Murat reside?
In Boston, Your Honor.
How did he get here today?
I believe, I'd have to ask him, I would believe.
Why don't you ask him?
Mr. Murat, how did you get here today?
I drove my daughter's car.
You drove your daughter's car?
Right. My daughter's car.
Counsel, want to be heard on the other side?
May I make one of the suggestions,
yes,
Your Honor? I think it would be appropriate to decide the issue just relative to the trial and to take it under advisement as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I think that with respect to venue, if our motion for cross-judgment on the pleadings is denied today, then we're going to trial. I can't foresee that trial is going to take more than one more day. So in actuality, he'll only have to travel here, you know, one or two more times. I don't know that that is remarkably inconvenient. Also, I think that it's either you travel to Boston and hold a hearing there or we travel here. We're absolutely opposed to having this reassigned to yet another judge. I think that there has been enough delay as it is, so we're very opposed to changing venue, and I don't think that asking Mr. Murat to travel here once or twice more is substantially inconvenient.
All right, there will be no change of judge. If we go to trial, I'll arrange that the trial will take place in Boston. The order that is outstanding with respect to Mr. Murat being barred from the 11th floor of the O'Neill Building remains in effect. I will issue an order when trial is scheduled permitting him to appear there that day. Other than that, all pleadings are to be filed here. All other proceedings with respect to this case will take place here. So venue remains in the Western Division, but trial will take place in Boston. Creditors, trustee, on the motion for judgment of the pleadings.
Your Honor, this case was remanded on two very narrow and specific issues, namely, one, whether the estate was administered negligently, causing Murat's tax liability or increasing his liability, and two, whether Mr. Murat has asserted this claim in a timely fashion. There are two very relevant things which render the remand moot. First of all, the creditor's trustee has set forth in his pleadings that pursuant to the plan, there was a transfer of all of the debtor's estate's remaining property to the creditor's trust. Creditor's trust. Therefore, if this court were to allow Mr. Murat's late administrative claim, there are no remaining assets in the estate to satisfy any such claim. Secondly, under the plan, there was a specific exculpation provision which precludes any negligence claims against the creditor's trustee. Accordingly, with respect to the negligence claim upon which has been remanded, the plan specifically precludes Mr. Gray's liability under any such claim.
The exculpation is in the creditor's trust, correct?
Correct. Yes.
All right, so your claim is that you can't get him as creditor's trustee because there's an exculpation clause, and you can't get him as trustee of the Chapter 11 estate because all the money's been dispersed.
Correct. There's adequate evidence in the pleadings of this case, all of which are duly noted in the record and referred to in the omnibus opposition we filed by docket. So in addition to the fact that you ruled last time that there would be no further evidence
or discovery.
So I think that any evidence that would be submitted at trial is already in the record before this court. So
why is that necessarily so? I mean, he could bring in witnesses.
Yes, but in order to prove a claim of negligence, which is exculpated by the plan, in order to prove that his claim wasn't timely filed when there's no funds in the estate, there is no estate. So even assuming that everything he said is true, there's no recourse for him.
Okay, I understand your answer.
So for that reason, we moved for judgment on the pleadings. Thank you.
Counsel, or Mr. Morad, I just want to argue this.
I would like to respond to that.
Well, you don't get to double dip. One of you gets to argue the motion.
May I have a moment with Mr. Morad?
Sure.
I'll argue it, Your Honor. Thank you for your indulgence. Your Honor, on the points that counsel has made, I would point out in the first instance that I think these claims have been stated in a manner such as to indicate gross negligence or intentional conduct. And I believe it's the trustee's claim that, in fact, the course of action he took relative to the S status and relative to the tax credit were designed to enhance the estate for the creditors. So I believe we've implicated more than just basic negligence. But in any event, Mr. Moran didn't have any standing to object to the clause which limits it to negligence, and we would take just the position that without that standing, the clause isn't applicable to him. I would add that.
I'm not sure I understand that. The exculpation clause was in the creditor's trust, which was authorized under the terms of the plan.
He didn't have standing to object to the plan.
Why didn't he?
That's what Judge Kemmer's ruling. I disagree with it, but he didn't have standing.
All right.
In fact, Judge Kemmer's order, and this is reflected in the First Circuit opinion, is that Mr. Murad didn't have any equity. And this lies at the heart of really the pure legal issue that we're dealing with on the issue of taxes. I understand that Mr. Murad has issues over and above the tax issues, but what the court has done here, in a very sort of odd situation, and where there isn't a lot of law in this, has said, you have no equity, you have no standing, you have no ability to destroy an S status. The S status remains intact, allowing the transfer away of a tax credit, but at the same time burdening him with the tax liability. So our position is that, as a matter of due process, if Mr. Murad can't object to a specific clause, he shouldn't be held accountable to it. As far as the funds are concerned, I would make two points about that. My understanding is that at the time this the pretrial order was entered, that the trustee identified $121,000 worth of assets. I don't know what's happened to those assets since. I know counsel indicates that there's nothing left. Counsel doesn't have an affidavit or any evidence indicating that. So, you know, without disclosure, it's hard to fathom what's there. But I think we also have to remember that the trustee is taking actions that impact potential claims. And for the trustee to take the position that he's distributed assets of the estate and then can take actions relative to tax returns, one of them being the 1997 return in this case, and then, and I understand it's not before the court, but other returns that he apparently doesn't have any authority to enter, he does that at his own risk, in our view, under the law. I would also say to Your Honor that, particularly from my point of view, that there's a hard construct to get past here for me, and that's that Judge Kenner ordered the estate closed, except for this pleading, which creates, I think, some difficulty in addressing different aspects. It seems to me then that the trustee was on notice as to his limited duties relative to the estate on the date of that order, and also on notice that he needed to preserve funds for Mr. Murad's claim. So on that aspect of the opinion, we believe that the motion should be denied. I would also add that in my view, and I've cited the rule relative to summary judgment, but in my rule, this motion, with the exception of the inclusion of a tax opinion, is no more than a 12B6 motion. I mean, essentially, this would go back to the First Circuit, where it is ruled that he made adequate claims, whatever the problems with the drafting of those or the agreement with that is. So I would submit that the attachment of the tax case adds nothing to the case. The case is under appeal. It's under appeal by right of statute from an administrative court in which jury trial is not permitted. And the judgment, in my view, under the law is not final until the First Circuit rules. For the court's information, our brief is done. This is a case that I am taking for Mr. Murad. And following through on the reply brief, I'm sorry, the opposition would be due, I believe, this week and reply shortly thereafter. So one of the core issues of this case will be resolved by the First Circuit within, I think, a reasonably brief time. It is my view that a lot of this case is susceptible to motions for summary judgment, and that the court should, in scheduling, provide the opportunity for that, because they do present interest.
There's been how many years of opportunity?
Well, Your Honor, you made your ruling on discovery.
Final pretrial was filed 2 years ago.
Your Honor, this is not an area. I understand your position. I respect your position. I understand the need to do it, but I also ask you to consider.
Well, right now I'm hearing the motion for judgment of the pleadings.
Well, also I'm indicating to Your Honors is that I do think on some of these issues, some very interesting issues, in fact, that this is susceptible to motion for summary judgment or a partial motion for summary judgment, and Your Honor may want to consider that as a device to try to limit the issues and in fact, limit the trial.
Well, the issues are very limited. BAP's already told us what the issues are.
Well, and I think we submitted a memo today to determine that.
I will give you a ruling before you leave today on what I think, based on what I've examined of the record, what the trustee, assuming we're going forward, what the trustee has said, and what you've said. And I will, before we leave today, if there's going to be a trial.
I understand.
We'll schedule it.
I understand. Right. I understand that if Mr. Murad, I'm just indicating that I think some of the issues can be cut down, and I think certainly that it may be premature before Your Honor's ruling on the specific issues. So I submit on my papers on that, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further?
I don't know exactly how to respond to those various allegations. I would just like to reiterate that this was remanded on two very narrow issues, and I think Attorney Riordan is yet again attempting to have this explode into a myriad of issues which are not before you. And so I'm not going to take into account everything he said and respond to that, but I think that it's very important that this does not get out of control.
All right. I'm going to deny the motion for judgment on the pleadings. I think there are facts well enough pled that if true, taking reasonable inferences in the claimant's favor, do state a claim. Whether it can be proved is something else again. I'm not considering this as a motion for summary judgment, but just a motion for judgment on the pleadings. And based on my review of the pleadings and hearing the argument, I find that there is, pleadings are sufficient, and the matter is not moot, and I'm denying that motion. That leaves us the motion, let me take care of the denial first. Denying their motion, but I'm also denying your motion to strike it. It doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. I now have a motion of Mr. Murad for reconsideration of the court's order precluding discovery. I'll hear argument on that briefly.
Your Honor, I'm happy to submit that on the paper. I mean, I think you made your position clear. The only two points I think we make is that this is a case where you had someone pro se. Your rules require a mandatory scheduling conference, and I think, without implying anything regarding individuals here, that the pretrial order in this case can be read to indicate that discovery was not going to be permitted at all. That would be the view. It seems to me that the court had an affirmative duty to hold that conference and to permit to create a scheduling order for discovery. There's no doubt they didn't do it. But other than that, we'll submit on the papers, Your Honor.
Your Honor, Mr. Morad's late administrative claim was filed in September of 1998. I believe that at the time the pretrial order entered, he was represented by counsel. There has been no instance in the last 6 years of when the pretrial order entered seeking clarification or otherwise with respect to discovery, and it's only upon Attorney Riordan's appearance 6 years after the order entered that evidence is now sought. I think that certainly precludes Mr. Morad. Secondly, with respect to the motion, it certainly doesn't satisfy the standards for reconsideration in the District of Massachusetts, which is mistake, inadvertence, surprise, excusable neglect, or newly discovered evidence. None of those grounds are alleged or pled.
Thank you. I'm going to deny the motion for reconsideration. I agree with Ms. Hertz that it doesn't meet the standards. I also believe that there was more than adequate time at several points during this if discovery was desired or needed, and I am denying the motion, and I'm entering a written decision on the record, which you folks will receive in due course. All right, that leaves according to my list, well, also on the list for today was the motion to change venue to another state. I'm denying that. We've already had the argument on that.
Your Honor, as a point of clarification, it was my understanding Judge Kenner did deny that.
I couldn't find anything on the record, but in case she didn't, I am.
All right.
Okay? With the papers moving around, there may have been some docketing issues, but you really weren't asking for that anyway, and I'm denying that. So this is the final pretrial. I've read the pretrial submissions. I've read the back decision, and I believe that there are two issues, and only two issues, that I have to deal with coming out of the bat. Two issues to be tried. Mr. Morad's allegations that Gray administered the estate negligently, causing or increasing Mr. Morad's tax liability. That's one. The other is whether Mr. Morad had cause to file his administrative claim late. All the other issues, it seems to me, have been addressed or outside the scope of this contested matter. So those are the two issues that we're going to try. I am prepared to schedule trial right now. I hope you folks have your calendars with me. Can I? I know you looked at some dates. Based on my reading, I know that the pretrial statement, which was entered when there were many more issues, or at least Mr. Moran thought there were many more issues at the time before the Babbitt decision, maybe it was after, had 22 witnesses. Do we still think that that's the number of witnesses that we're going to have?
Your Honor, I think that question actually should be addressed to Mr. Moran.
Mr. Moran, how many witnesses do you think you're going to need on those two issues?
I'll have to go over the list again, Your Honor, but possibly about 12 to 14 witnesses.
All right. Unfortunately, it's very difficult in my schedule to put together consecutive days. So the first day of trial will be Monday, September 13th. Monday, September 13th, 10 a.m. at the courthouse in Boston on the 11th floor. I'm not sure which courtroom we'll be using, but it'll be posted when you get there. Bring your calendars with you for that trial, and after we see how far we get that day, if we need additional days, we'll schedule them that time. Ms. Ritz.
Your Honor, would you permit me a few minutes to call Mr. Gray to make sure that he's available on that date?
Sure, I've got another matter.
Okay. I knew that Mr. Jones.
Tell him I require his presence.
He's our star witness.
I understand. And we're giving him almost 8 weeks' notice, so I expect he'll be able to adjust his schedule accordingly. But rather than have to chase people down afterwards, why don't you take a few minutes, go call him, and I'm going to ask Mr. Morad and Mr. Reardon to stay here, so that if that's a problem, we know. Is there any problem as far as you know with that date, Mr. Morad?
No, no problem.
Fine. Why don't you go out and call him? And I'm also going to, since the pre-trials were so long ago, I'm going to require that the parties file and circulate an updated witness list, so that'll force you folks to do one thing at least, is to look at your witness list and pare it down if necessary.
Your Honor, we listed two witnesses, and I know that those aren't changing, not
but
increasing
you think you
or decreasing.
Okay, that's fine. So, Mr. Morad, you've heard that they're not changing their witness list to submit updated witness. Mr. Moran, you're directed to submit file and circulate an updated witness list no later than September 1st.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a brief recess on this matter to permit counsel to reach the trustee, confirming his availability. Do we have a matter on at 10?
Yeah.
All right. I'll take my 10 o'clock matter show and take a few minutes. Report back to me as soon as you can. Very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. for that site. What? Yeah, yes. Is that what's on the Briola? Okay. Excuse me? Yeah. You can stay and go.
Donald and Lisa La Briola, case number 0245033. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Joanne Silas for the Chapter 13 trustee.
Paula Roche for Mr. and Mrs. La Briola.
Go ahead, counsel.
Your Honor, I've just conferred with counsel, though the trustee is not here. We've agreed that if the court would give us a, we know time is of the essence, predicated upon the way we brought this matter before the court. We are on a deadline, at which time there are several options that we'd like to pursue. We did not receive the trustee's objection until the latter part of yesterday afternoon, and at which time we had been having conversations with the trustee earlier this spring, and we didn't foresee that we'd have a potential difference of opinion. We'd like to be able to step this back. I believe the trustee should be available tomorrow, which I confer with her, so which may be the latter part of the week, first part of next week.
I can give you time. You want to come in, or you want to do it by telephone, or anywhere else?
I'm more than willing to come in, Your Honor. That's not a problem.
I'm here all day tomorrow, and I'm here most of the day. I'm here at least till early afternoon on Friday.
Your Honor, I'm sorry. Friday's not good for us, but I know the trustee has motions tomorrow morning at 9:15. If Counselor, if you want to just, or I'm thinking probably next week, which is better.
First part of
what
week.
What we're talking about, counsel needs to get the debtors.
Well, then it'll be done by telephone. I'm going to be sitting in Delaware next week, but I'm happy to do it next week if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. We can set it up. You guys can come here, or you can stay in your offices and we can do it by conference call. You tell me what you want to do.
I could either agree to, if the trustee's willing to come here, do it from here, and or I'd be more than willing to go to the trustee's office and do a conference call.
Well, that's easier for me.
From our offices, then.
That's fine. If you want to go to her office, that makes conferencing easier.
Yes.
Let me grab my schedule for next week so we can set a time before you leave.
Thank you very much, Ron.
That's why I got here at 9:30, hoping she'd show up.
Oh, well, she's going to Springfield this afternoon, so I could come.